Welcome to The Future and You. Ideas and opinion about the future based on verifiable facts of today. This episode is for September 11, 2013. I am your host, Stephen Ewan Cobb. Our topic today is the end of retirement as we know it. Our guest is Michael Nuschke. Michael Nuschke is a professional retirement planner who is also a futurist and life extensionist. His website is retirementsingularity.com, and the motto at the top of his webpage is Retirement Planning in the Age of the Singularity. By combining his profession with his futurism, he has written a report entitled The End of Retirement as We Know It. This report is available as a free PDF download from his website. I've read it. It's excellent. In my interview with Michael, we discuss his report at length. We cover his assessment of how things are changing and his advice which you can use to improve your personal future. Here's a paragraph I plucked from his website. Quote, I specialize in retirement income planning, how to ensure you don't run out of money before you run out of life. This gets tricky if you live well past age 100 in good health. As a retirement futurist, I am here to help you understand what your future will be like and make the best of it both financially and lifestyle-wise. Unquote. This interview was recorded using Skype on August 31st, 2013. The first half will be presented in this week's episode, and the second half will be presented next week. This is a topic I have wanted to cover for a very long time. And so, on to our topic. Here is Michael Nuschke.
I am a practicing retirement planner. I'm an investment advisor, retirement income advisor. I've been doing that for 30-odd years. And so my real interests, similar to yours in singularity and transhumanist type topics, has merged with my profession. I thought they were two totally different things to think about until I realized that this is real.
Yeah.
And so I'm just somebody who's basically had a profession and a passion, and now they're kind of coming together. So it's quite exciting. And obviously it's still, I mean, everything is still evolving. But what I find interesting, and maybe we should wait, is that there's virtually no talk about this in the financial world. So, I mean, so that's really kind of odd, I find, but maybe not unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really where I want to begin. There's two quotes I want to open with from your book or your booklet, The Free Report, which is The End of Retirement as We Know It. Near the beginning, these two quotes, the retirement planning profession as a whole uses future assumptions that totally miss the extraordinary impacts of technological advances. And the second quote is, the vast majority of current info and advice on retirement planning assumes the future will be nearly the same as today, an example of status quo or linear thinking that is dangerous to your wealth and your health. If you would talk about the disconnect between what is really to come or is going on already in some ways, in many ways, and what the retirement planning community is, their working future vision.
Sure.
Yeah, where is the disconnect?
Yeah, the two quotes that you refer to about the assumptions that the profession of retirement planning makes are essentially pretty linear from the point of view that they're just saying that people will live the same kind of life expectancies as we see right now, maybe with a little bit of change. Now, there have been, I've read about 20 different modern retirement planning books in the last couple of years looking for anybody else's insight on what I see coming. What I see coming primarily, as discussed in the report, are two major areas that we could kind of talk about. One is radical healthy life extension, and that is living a lot longer and in good shape, both physically and mentally. And that's due to the advances of medicine and technology, nanotechnology, et cetera, biotechnology. These things are coming along so fast. It's not surprising that the retirement field hasn't really thought about it. But the assumptions that my industry normally take are that people might live, you're approaching retirement, say you're 60-ish or 55 or something like that, and you're starting to think about retirement really seriously. Well, then you start really looking at how much money do I have? How long do I have to make it last? You know, how can I keep my money safe? And is my pension or my pensions secure? That kind of stuff. But we were talking about maybe I'll live till 85, you know, or maybe even 90. And then, you know, my health is going to be failing at the end. And that's fair game, because that's how the kind of schedule seems to be working and has been working. But I think what's happening here is we're being caught by the acceleration of change from technology that's affecting the medical world, that I think will start pushing out healthy lifespans much more quickly. You know, currently, about every 6 years, the average lifespan, you know, we're talking in the U.S. or in Canada, goes up by another year. So about every 6 years, our lifespans are at the current rate, they're going up by 1 year every 6 years. But what we're talking about is a much more drastic and radical shift. It's not just little changes, but it's kind of more fundamental changes that are coming through medical technologies such as stem cell therapies, genetic therapies, which are really just in the cusp of starting to really have major impacts, and studies are coming in all the time showing, you know, dramatic reports of you know, proof of concept that our aging process is not a fixed process. It's a process that can be changed. And now that we have the software code, you know, the understanding of DNA, you know, to me, and I think to many other scientists who follow this kind of trend, is that it's really more appropriate to think that our lifespans will dramatically increase in about 15 to 20 years as some of these technologies get more mature and start getting introduced in the public domain. So retirement planning obviously doesn't see that coming. You know, it's speculative from their point of view, if they even consider it. But it's not totally off the map, you know, in terms of the thinking of like insurance companies. They're worried about it for sure. But essentially, it's lifespans are really not something that retirement planning has really made any change on really that much. Secondly, in terms of the other major thrust of the report, talking about the radical changes that technology will have in kind of creative destructive changes in things like robotics and artificial intelligence, that will affect things like the job market. And that's already happening, of course, where there's now, you know, hundreds of thousands of jobs being displaced by robotics. But that's just the beginning. And it's really silly to think that that's it and that it's not going to accelerate, because it's being driven by the by the exponential advance of technology. And, you know, why will that stop? I don't, you know, it really doesn't seem like it's slowing down. So from the point of view of retirement planning, what that means is it has impacts on the types of jobs, the types of industries that might thrive or not thrive in the future. And say your pension is coming from a company who might get suddenly displaced by technology, and also their pensions, people that are retiring are living a lot longer, will that pension plan be able to pay out? So these are not things that are currently really thought about seriously. They're speculative, but I don't think they're, I mean, in my opinion, after studying it for some time and really delving into this topic, to me, it is coming, and it's just a matter of time, and the timing of it is a little bit hard to fathom. But I certainly don't think it's more than, say, 30 years away that all these things will be coming to have great impact. So if you're retiring, if you're 55, 60, 65, this is in your lifetime. So as a retirement planner, you have to kind of think that, well, we're talking about your future. So, and that's always been the case, but the future hasn't been changing as fast as it is now, and will accelerate as the age we're in now. So really, I guess I might be the first retirement planner that I've heard of that might call himself a retirement futurist. And frankly, that's just because I'm being realistic, in my opinion, whereas the profession as a whole is not looking ahead. It's just basically thinking linearly that things will not change that much compared to the last 50 years.
One of the things you were talking about just now is the difficulty of investing. And just the other day, Nissan, I believe it was, announced, I heard it on the radio, that by 2020, which is approximately 7 years from now, they anticipate having fully self-driving vehicles available for consumers. This means that all those professions based on driving, which it would include, right now there are, in America, there are approximately 800,000 truck drivers, not to mention cab drivers and other drivers, their jobs would all be at risk, and their industries would be at risk of, well, maybe the trucking industry would, of course, continue to go on, but it would undergo some kind of radical shift. And this is just one example of many, what you're calling, destructive, what's the phrase you use?
Creative destructive.
Yeah, many destructive, disruptive effects on investing, so that it becomes increasingly difficult to know what in the world to invest in.
Yeah, that's true. And I've been basically working on this myself for the last few years about how to implement or how to look at the investment side of what we're talking about. You know, and there are two parts to that. One is avoiding loss, and the other one is to actually take advantage of some of these trends so that you could actually make profits. Now, in the world of technology investing, there are technology companies that are kind of emerging, you know, idea stocks, new companies, and then there are the big technology companies. And I think that's really two different ways that you can actually participate. And I think both ways are valid. When you're talking at the big technology companies, you know, like a Google or an IBM, well, you know, you think about Google, and again, I'm not going to say any company or stock I mention is not a recommendation, but I'm just talking in general principles. Whenever you're talking to an investment advisor, they always have to be careful about what we say in public about investments. But really, people should have their own investment advisor and get advice about their own situation, because one investment may be appropriate for one person but not appropriate for another person. So I'm just going to be talking more in general terms, but Google as a company is quite interesting. You know, it's kind of interesting that, like, Ray Kurzweil now, the futurist Ray Kurzweil, who really developed the idea of the singularity, which is part of my business's name, or retirement singularity, is essentially now the head of engineering at Google, involved with a project of essentially furthering natural language capabilities for Google's tools, and that would be like a souped up Siri, you know, the friendly little person that you can talk to by asking questions to your iPhone or your iPad. But the essentially, you know, his most recent book, you know, How to Build a Human Mind, I think it is all about how the brain functions, and essentially one of the most important parts or dimensions of that is language, natural language. And so from the point of view of a company, here is Google on the leading edge, by one of the greatest thinkers, in my opinion, in the world in terms of where we're heading, now helping, being financed by very, you know, big pockets of Google, furthering whatever can be furthered in that world. I would think the potential is just mind-boggling. Even though Google is a huge company, nevertheless, what I think is what he's into is going to be kind of world-changing, and so that's not currently making much of any money for Google, but I think it could be massive. So large technology companies have the potential of looking, you know, of seeing the territory and understanding what's coming, because they have research departments and they have money to actually spend and see what's coming. So they can buy some of the most interesting small companies who want to sell out. And kind of merge them into their business, and that's if that company, if Google or whoever it is is fast enough and has a flexible enough structure that they can change based on what's emerging, then the potential of large companies is still very, very big, and it could accelerate in the future. So I think big tech is definitely an area to look at. And then the emerging technology stocks, they're extraordinarily exciting, both in terms of the medical side of things, but also the technology side of things. And there's many different spin-offs that are associated with that. Could be from from encryption software to there's all kinds of different aspects of technology that small companies have the potential of hitting something really big. There's one stock in my portfolio, and it's only the only one that's gone up this much, but and just the last few years, it's gone up like something like 40-fold. A big company is not going to do that probably. So small companies have the potential of explosive growth. However, I also have quite a few stocks that have gone down 70 or 80%. Here I am. I'm an investment advisor, and I'm holding these stocks myself. I'm kind of experimenting on myself right now. But I really think that in the small tech area, you have to be willing to hold a portfolio of at least 10, probably more than that, maybe 20 different stocks that give you the potential of hitting one or two or three big ones. And because of the creative destructive nature of any small business, something like 90% of them fail, you have to expect that most of the things you buy, either the timing is wrong, or the whole company is somebody else comes up with something better, or they're passed, or they make mistakes. But occasionally you get the kind of win that will make up for, a dozen of other companies that are lagging. So those are one way to participate in the growth side is actually to directly invest in technology through those two methods. When it comes to other types of investments, you have to worry about losing money. And that has to do with like a company like Kodak. And I talk about this in the report, the End of Retirement as We Know It report, about the Kodak blockbuster effect. And that's where you have companies that are relying on a certain technology that may even see the new technology coming, but don't really in a business manner react to it or adjust to that new reality fast enough. And so they've gotten swept away by this creative destruction of technology. The creative part is now we don't need photo equipment to develop a picture. We have a digital camera. What's odd is that Kodak actually invented the digital camera, but they never adopted it, as they thought it would be it wouldn't work and or it wouldn't catch on. And so they really kind of missed the boat, and they really came very, very, they were way late in the game after losing a lot of money in traditional markets, and essentially now have disappeared. And similarly with Blockbuster on the, selling videos or renting videos, when you get a number of other mediums to access your videos that don't require you to go to the store, they didn't keep up with it. So it's those are just examples where technology can change and basically just pull the rug out from under whole industries or whole large companies. And that's surprising. So what does that mean to somebody who's investing, trying to build their money? Well, you have to kind of be worried about, are the companies you're into, are they led by people that have some kind of vision? Do they have investment in research and development? Do they watch their competition? And that's something that's not easy for the average person to look at, but you can get that kind of analysis if you're working with an advisor who understands what they have to look for, or possibly a mutual fund or something like that, where the manager of the fund who picks the stocks, those are some of the criteria they would look at. When it comes to your own stocks, you have to kind of worry that, the buy and hold company that has paid me a dividend forever will be there forever. Well, maybe not. is that industry going to be here in 15 years? And if not, you better start looking for the door about, you know, what's where should I be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you were talking, I was thinking of two different industries that are gone, one upward and one downward. When I first started doing the show, during my first year back in 2005 and 2006, I asked a number of authors that were familiar with ebooks. What do you think about ebooks? What do you think about their future? Do you think they'll ever outsell regular, you know, physical books? And every one of them said no, that we will not live to see the day when ebooks outsell physical books. But it was only maybe 4 years later, maybe 5 years later, that they did outsell. At least Amazon, the largest seller of physical books on the planet, they outsold their physical books with ebooks first in hardback, and then within about 7 or 8 months, the paperbacks as well.
Yeah.
And this has impacted many of the major publishing houses. But another industry that's undergone a great deal of change is solar cells, photovoltaic cells, which has been growing at a installed rate in America of about 30% per year for, I don't know how many years, several years, and shows no sign of slowing down. Yet it's also a dangerous place to invest.
Yeah.
I follow it myself. And some companies, well, of course, there's four different technologies, and many of the companies are married to one only. And so if their technology ends up not being the dominant one, they sort of fall by the wayside. And we've already seen the problems with the Chinese undercutting prices and the Europeans fighting against that. And there's a lot of internal strife, you might say, within the industry itself. And so the winners and losers really haven't shown themselves fully yet. It's full of promise for a bright future as far as it's a major growing industry.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I'm really excited by the potential of solar in terms of its impact on the globe, and also in terms of, you know, ubiquitous energy. Like, you know, there's this, at least, well, I'm actually in Canada right now, so can't say it shines everywhere all the time. But you know, it's like, I think there's just a fraction of 1% of the energy hitting the earth is all that's needed for the entire earth's energy needs. And it's just a matter of the efficiency of converting that solar energy to usable energy, and then the storage issue. Those are the two big things. And you're right, but there's an amazing example of creative destructive forces. And the creative part is the technologies are developing. Now I think the leading part of it is the nanotechnology, you know, merging with the technologies of solar, where you're getting, you know, nanotechnology helping to fine tune and basically enhance the conversion rate of solar energy. But essentially the growth is, just as you said, it has been hampered by a lot of industry fighting and then government subsidies, and you know, including the government from the Chinese part as well, and the responses to that, and you know, so that's the destructive part. There's a lot of destruction happening with this. So that's the mess, you know, that is solar technology. So what do you do with that? Well, there's an example of, it's really tough to know. And I think you're right. It's like there are some really interesting companies, like those that have a technology we could spray. You could spray solar cells onto your window, and then have it hooked up, have that window hooked up to capture energy, and it actually leaves your window clear. So it's you know, that's amazing to me. So you know, there is actually a company that does that. Now, is that company, you know, if you could find that company and invest it, are you going to make $1 million, or who knows? I mean, because there may be some other larger company that slightly improves upon that technology, that's much bigger and better at marketing or whatever, and now they're the winners, and maybe they get swallowed up by somebody else. So it's very difficult. And that's where, in the emerging technology area, you really have to know what you're doing and then spread your money around. You just can't think, even though you're really leading edge on this, you can't think that you know for sure that what you're picking is going to work. So one example is to avoid that altogether, or to buy most of it. And you can do that. There are things you can buy, the exchange traded funds, if you know what that is. It's like a mutual fund that trades on the stock market. And there's more than one solar energy ETFs, exchange traded funds. And that, when you're buying that, you're buying a whole collection of solar companies. Now, again, there's no guarantee of profit because of the creative destructive stuff that's going on. everything that's currently existing may get replaced by something new that hasn't come out yet. So we can't say for sure, but if you're a large solar company, you're probably spending some money watching what's coming out, who your competitors are, where it's going. And if you're, you know, nimble enough and you have enough money devoted towards research and development, and you're able to take over small emerging companies that have promising new technologies, that's where the big tech can make sense. And so that helps, you know, essentially by buying a company, you're buying the brains of that company in terms of their ability to keep up with their industry. No guarantee, but that's one way to, you know, find smart people at the top that know that it's a creative destructive industry, that are willing to change their corporate, you know, their corporate, the corporation around drastically. And that's hard to do for corporations. And that's kind of what happened, you know, with the companies that we mentioned, Kodak. You know, they even though they saw this coming, they would just could not change because they had too much invested in their current technology. So it's not easy. So one of the problems with big companies is they can't change fast enough to keep up. But also one of the benefits of big companies is they can develop a operational structure where they can do that. And I think, you know, companies like a Google or an Apple seem like companies that would fit the latter, where they are able to keep up with it. So again, those are not recommendations because they might be a buy today or a buy tomorrow and not today. So it's you really have to kind of look at your strategy in terms of how you're investing. What I say in the report is one way to financially kind of prepare for the future is to, I mean, one of the aspects is to build streams of sustainable income. And that's easier said than done. What I mean by that is you can't rely on any one thing. You have to kind of diversify in different ways of getting an income. And if we're going to live a long time and in good health and good mind and body, one of the key points of the report is that the whole idea of retirement, you really have to wonder whether the word retirement makes sense anymore, because it was kind of developed not that long ago where we actually finally did have a period between stopping working and before you died, and then that was kind of created, made into what we call retirement. It's a fairly recent phenomena. But now I think that phenomena is shortly going to be obsolete, the idea of retirement altogether. And that's why the name of my report is The End of Retirement as We Know It. Is one of the things that I think in this world of the future is if you're 80 years old and you feel like you're 30 and you're actually in better shape and better mental capacity, why do you think you're going to retire and sit around and not do anything? Yeah. Well, you're probably still going to want to do things, and you'll need to pay for those things. And the longer we live, the longer we have the risks of things like inflation, of market disruption, that if we've stopped working, that now our retirement is questionable. The safety and financial security is not going to be there. So part of my feeling is that we'll have to kind of change the way we think about our life altogether.
That was Michael Nuschke. The second half will be presented next week. You can learn more about him at his website, retirementsingularity.com. That's spelled RetireMentSingularity.com. Or using the links I've placed in the show's blog post, which is located at thefutureandyou.libsyn.com. Libsyn is spelled LIBSYN.
That's it for this episode of The Future and You. This program is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 2.5 license. A copy of this license may be viewed at creativecommons.org. Briefly, this means you may, indeed you are encouraged to, copy this entire program as many times as you wish and give it away to as many people as you wish. but you may not copy only a portion of this program, you may not charge anyone any amount of money for it, and you may not use any portion of it to make something new. On the other hand, anyone whose obvious goal is to recommend the show to others automatically gets special dispensation. Offline reviews, which include the show's website, may include brief quotes. And online reviews, such as for a blog or community group or webpage, which provide a conspicuous link to the show's website, may use as many quotes as they wish, up to and including a transcript of one half of any interview. The show's theme music is a blues number called Some Sympathy by Chris Jurgensen, and is from his album Big Bad Son, which is available at Magnatune.com. Magnatune is an independent record label that sells its catalog of music through online downloads and print-on-demand CDs. The company allows artists to retain full rights to their music and splits equally with an artist all the revenue from the sale of their work. All the music at Magnatune may be previewed free of charge, and customers can even choose how much they want to pay for the music, with pricing ranging from $5 to $18 per album. You can learn more about them at Magnatune.com. That's spelled MAGNATUNE.com. If you have a theory or opinion about what the future will contain, be it the near future or the far future, you may email it to me at thefutureandyou.com. That's ME@thefutureandyou.com. You may also suggest topics that you would like to hear discussed, or send contact information for experts that you feel might provide valuable insights into the future. Mind you, an expert is not necessarily someone with an impressive degree. The best experts are the people who live or work or strive in the area under discussion. If the subject is science or medicine or academia, a degree is important. But if the discussion concerns trends in construction or firefighting or video gaming, a degree is pretty much meaningless. To get the inside dope, you've got to find the people who actually do this stuff every day. They are the first to see the trends, because the trends have already begun changing their lives. As to the topics we will explore in the next episode of The Future and You, I can make no guarantees. Interviews are still being sought, recorded, and edited. All I can promise is that we will ruminate on the future. To learn more, check the show's website at thefutureandyou.com. If you enjoyed the program, please mention it to a friend, and be sure to join me again next time. Until then, I have been your host, Stephen Ewan Cobb. On behalf of myself and all my guests, I thank you for listening.